The border wall is going up. Refugees are going to be kept out for a while, I guess. I don't even know what's going on. There's so many things that are happening so quickly, it is impossible to keep track of. But good morning, Kelly. Here, thanks so much for joining me. Mexico is getting ready to quit NAFTA if the talks fail. Mexico apparently choosing trade over an agreement. Stocks going to an all-time high. I think that there is this argument about how many people went to the inauguration now. They say that more people watched this inauguration than any in history. Now, from the pictures, it looks like there were more at Obama's inauguration by far. But I'm just wondering, and I'd love to hear your theory on this, 523-1450. I'm wondering if he isn't getting involved in this debate to take away eyes and ears from these more substantial things, which is the wall, which is banning illegals, all of this stuff, increasing the number of border. Although obviously the president ran on this stuff. One of the most fascinating things about Trump so far to me has been his insistence on honoring all of his promises, his utter fearlessness in going after his promises. And I have seen so many politicians run on promises, and then when they get into office, they either take a long time to try to put them in or they never even attempt it. And I'm thinking, how would, it seems like the political class in this country has been so poorly served by the people that came before them. How does it benefit you if you promise something and run on it and then don't do it or don't even try to do it? The only thing that's beneficial is that you try and either do it or go down swinging, but I don't really understand how not doing it. There's obviously this large group of people that gets a kick out of lying to people, misleading individuals, and then when they get a chance, they trade everything for power. Anyway, here is Trump to sign executive order enabling construction of proposed border wall and targeting sanctuary cities. These are more of these executive orders that he's signing to get rid of old executive orders or create new ones. Fascinating. Washington Post. And the Post is saying they have a little clip here, but it didn't appear to have any sound in it other than little glockenspiel or whatever, glockenspiel. President Trump plans to sign executive orders Wednesday enabling construction of his proposed wall on the U.S.-Mexico border.
Don't worry, we're going to build that wall. That wall will go up. It's going to go up.
All right, so let's just say, when Trump said that, Obama said the wall was not going to happen, and other politicians said the wall is not going to happen, and I'm thinking, if, it was impossible, it would be like putting a colony on Mars or something, and they're standing up there, he'll never do it, like the technology in putting up a wall is so, it's so excessive, it's so over the top. And I'm thinking when I'm hearing people say this, really? Is the technology is so hard, or is it be so impossible? We waste billions of dollars every day on junk in this country. by the government, but we couldn't afford a wall. Some people said we can't afford it. I think it is this leftist, what I was talking to you about before, what we had talked about, magical thinking. Leftism is saturated with this idea, as long as we want it bad enough, it's going to happen. You know, and now they want Trump to fall. They want him to trip and fall. That, don't you see, this guy was built for conflict? It's like a tank, you know? He was built for conflict. He loves debate. He loves to see people. He loves to say things and see an emotional reaction. So he's putting this in, and how hard is it for him to do it? It was about as hard for him to do that as it was for Obama to sign his executive orders. And now here's this story in CNN. Is Donald Trump's border wall possible? I mean, if freaking China, like thousands of years ago, put up a great wall across the country, I just don't. I mean, there's a lot of stuff that I understand people are caught up in and debating. 805-6180, I heard the text machine start to go off. What exactly would be so daunting about building? I mean, what if it was the goal of someone to build a wall across their state? I mean, what's the technological problem? It is an absolute non-issue in terms of technology, but people are, I'm just getting a kick out of this idea. It's impossible. You can't build the wall. Anyway, so just another dumb CNN story. And all right, here's one from ABC that hopefully isn't too ideological. But okay, so we've got a fight between the president, who has nothing to lose in his mind and is probably true. We've got a fight between him and the media. Now, who's going to win that fight? Well, ultimately, the media will be there after Donald Trump is dead and gone. But in the meantime, I think that Donald Trump and the rest of the people on the right who have really kind of dug in and helped create this alternative media, which is the internet, which includes, in my opinion, talk radio. Because think about this. Before Rush Limbaugh, there really was no serious talk radio, you know. And the internet and all these different things, Twitter and all these things. And alternative media is coming up. And the mainstream media is like, you know what, the mainstream media is like a heavyweight fighter who has been, you know, champion for so long and now is starting to get battered in every fight and is just about to get knocked out. And I see the mainstream media, companies like New York Times, you cannot hire somebody who is famous like John Harwood, like... who's the guy from Glenn Thrush from Politico, who admitted in WikiLeaks, and it was unopposed information. You cannot hire somebody like that who worked with the opposition, who allowed their articles to be ghostwritten by the Hillary campaign, that admitted he targeted during the election Donald Trump like John Harwood. You cannot hire these people and put them out there and expect individuals to support them. And so, you know, the buying news, buying the New York Times, the world's most beautiful newspaper, the style in the New York Times is the greatest style in the history of writing, in newsprint writing. I'm convinced of that. And yet they're flushing their brand down the toilet because they don't care if they're seen as biased, openly biased. So you're taking your business model and destroying it. I mean, I don't get it. So there's this suicide movement. There's an impulse towards suicide in the history of socialism that goes back to the very beginning. Go back and study it. I challenge you. So anyway, here's a little bit on this wall from, what was it, ABC? All right, of course, now it's stuck. Let me close off some of the, that's what I get for opening too many windows and blabbing on too long. Well, a little cold out there, huh? Supposed to get down to 28 degrees last night. Anybody have hibiscus plants? All right, this computer's about to kick back to life here as I close these windows, but all right, we'll take a break. Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, AM 1450, 523, 1450, and 805-6180 to text, and we'll be right back. Call in or text. Hey, it's Kelly. It's Kelly.
Hey, Chris.
Hey, what's up?
Are you on? Yeah, this is Tom.
Yes, of course.
I was wondering if you're aware of the survey that's being sent around randomly to residents of Las Cruces.
No, what's the survey about?
It's just about everything under the sun that have to do with the city.
Who is sent?
I don't know if you're interested.
Tom.
I got a copy. I
Tom.
Can mail it to you if you want
Tom.
To give me an address.
Tom. Can you hear me?
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you know who sent it?
I can send you a copy of it if you want. Give me an address. Let's see.
Just send it in. I'm sorry, Tom, but don't let me interrupt.
Yeah, I don't have it right at hand to tell
Tom,
you.
I gotta
who
go. Tom,
it.
Tom, I gotta go back on the air in just a second, but 101 Perkins. It'll get here.
101
Perkins.
Okay.
It'll get here. Thanks.
All right, we'll do.
Have a good day. All right, so what if we had a leader in this city like Trump who just jumped on problems? Like, okay, so let me ask you this. This city is famous. This city is like one of those towns that they build when they were doing open nuclear testing. It's like one of those towns that they build within the fallout area, and then they film them, and there's all these empty, you know, empty buildings, and then they show how the shake roof gets blown off, and they start burning and everything. So this is like an empty city, you know, with this is like there's been a nuclear business bomb that's gone off that's killed all these businesses, and now you have all these empty structures just kind of sitting there to show the potential or what it used to be, whatever. What if we had a leader who jumped on this issue, you know? And now what would it take? I don't know. I mean, I don't know what policies it would take. I'm sure that Ben Rawson might have a theory, which would include taxation and regulations and everything. But what if this city got really serious about attracting businesses? What would it do? What would Trump do? You know, and then you would have people that would stand up and it's not possible. Is it really possible to have businesses in these empty buildings? Are you crazy? So anyway, here is Donald Trump's pledge. Possible to build a wall? Oh my gosh.
The wall, we have no choice. We have no choice. Build that wall. 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 So, we're going to build it. Who's going to pay for the wall? 100%. By the way, 100%.
So, but they've got us convinced that just building a wall around our country is immoral. Isn't that amazing? That would be like your neighbors coming together and convincing you that locking your door at night is an immoral activity because there's poor people. There's a lot of poor people in the neighborhood who have the moral and the legal right to come into your house because they're starving to get food. Now you say, well, it's crazy. That's not a very good analogy. It's actually a perfect analogy because that's the idea, is that these people are desperate. They desperately need to get in here to have good lives. And we don't have either the moral or the legal right to hold them out. That's what this past administration taught people. And that's what liberalism teaches people. Now, is it far leftism? Is it any wonder that whatever liberalism touches, it destroys? I hate to say it, but it's as obvious as the nose on your face. All right, here is from ABC.
Huge impact on San Diego, and in just a few hours, President Trump plans to make good on that border wall between the U.S. and Mexico. The president will take executive action, ordering federal resources to begin that construction.
10 News reporter Emily Soad is at the border tonight with how this is already resonating with San Diegans. Emily?
So people here very on edge. President Trump has been very cryptic about what he plans to do with these executive actions, but I want to show you this sign we just stumbled across. This is a Mexico-only sign, and you could look down. It says, F Trump.
Sometimes it's scary, you know.
Ruben Sanchez lives in both San Diego and Tijuana. He, like tens of thousands of others, crosses the border daily.
I was born in the Mexican side, but half of my family are living on this side of the border.
Tuesday night, Mr. Trump tweeted, "Big day planned on national security tomorrow. Among many other things, we will build the wall."
Obviously, I disagree with it totally.
Reuters reports Trump is going to order the wall be built and take action to reduce the number of undocumented immigrants in the U.S.
It's unfortunate that President Trump will be taking these initiatives on immigration.
Pedro Rios is with American Friends Service Committee, a local human rights organization.
They seem to be initiatives that will continue to divide the country and not necessarily move it forward, not addressing what we really need, which is immigration reform.
Thousands of people that are in the same situation as me.
Reuters reports Mr. Trump will also block visas from being issued to anyone from Syria, Iraq, Iran, Libya, Somalia, Sudan, and Yemen, and order a multi-month ban on allowing refugees into the U.S., except for religious minorities escaping persecution until more aggressive vetting is in place.
San Diegans have always stood together. They have always demonstrated the support for immigration.
Oh, come on. The sky is falling. You know, we had an election over this stuff. This guy ran on these topics. So what is it evil that he's doing? It seems like you're going to have to do something to protect the country during the age of Islam, radical Islam. Although some people would just say, drop radical and just talk Islam, which I have some agreement with, of course. But all right, so here is from CNN, which has become the cancer, the anti-Trump cancer network.
Going to travel to the Department of Homeland Security tomorrow afternoon to sign a few executive orders. All of them are pertaining to immigration. He's talked so much about that wall during the campaign. Well, tomorrow he will put a pen to paper and sign an executive order directing the Department of Homeland Security to build that wall. Now, of course, he has already talked about that. It's already underway in Congress. So unclear exactly why an order needs to be signed here, Don, but it certainly is a symbolic big moment as he tries to change the subject, like you said, but also keeps going through the week-long activities. We've seen
he's trying to change the subject. How about this? He's just doing what he said that he was going to do. Now, whether it's the most efficient way to do it, he's got a pen, he's got a phone, he's signing executive orders. This guy reporting right here, Zelny, is the same guy who got up and asked the president if what's the most enchanting moment of your presidency been so far? And, so we've had eight years of a con artist up there with a big smile doing everything he can to harm America. And a significant number of people still support this. Barack Obama. Friends, I just don't get it. But here's a little more.
Him meeting, with auto manufacturers, other people throughout the week, everyone that sort of fits these big priorities. But tomorrow, immigration. But also, Don, later in the week, he's going to be continuing to roll out some immigration-like proposals, including refugees, targeting some countries, Syria and others, that are terror-prone. And he's going to roll back and change the U.S. refugee policy. That will come after the wall tomorrow when he goes to the Homeland Security Department.
Yeah, this is an interview with Kelly O'Connell.
I am Kelly O'Connell.
All right, okay. I have a congressman right here.
Thank you. All right, folks, we do.
Details in right now. Donald.
We do have Steve Pierce on the line. Steve, are
good
you
morning.
There? Good morning, Steve. How's it going?
Hey, I'm doing great. We're here in brisk Washington, D.C. Headed out to the retreat this morning, though. Each year we get both parties go on about a two-day retreat, try to lay out the schedule for the year and figure out what we're going to focus on. So that's where we're headed. I think Mr. Trump will come in and speak to us. The new prime minister from England is also scheduled.
Theresa May.
First time ever that a retreat has had had a foreign head of government. So pretty exciting time.
Fantastic. I hope the Democrats brought their pacifiers.
Well, they are stirring it up right now. So all we're doing is trying to stay focused on the business of the country.
Well, that's good. And there's a lot of stuff going on right now. There are executive orders going out every day, imminent to be signed on the wall and on visas and on immigration. What's the feel in Washington right now? It must be kind of almost overwhelming, the amount of activity.
It is. It's pretty upbeat, overwhelming. In other words, we often hear campaign promises, but you very seldom on either side see someone who actually comes in and sort of methodically works their way through it. And very rarely are they ready to go on day one. He started the day that he was inaugurated last Friday, went into the Oval Office and signed a couple of executive orders, came back across, did some other meetings. So I think that everyone describes President Trump is someone with a lot of energy, and I think that's going to be the case. But it's also significant things he's doing. You can like or dislike the position he took on TPP, but it was a campaign slogan, basically, that he used, and here he is doing it. You can like or dislike that he says he's going to do everything he can to build jobs, but even before being inaugurated, he started taking on, you remember that he took on Ford, and they said, oh, okay, we're not going to build that plant in Mexico. We're going to reinvest more in American jobs. I kind of am ready for a president who will take that sort of interest in growing the economy. So he's playing right into his strength, which is business, job creation, building, growth, all of those.
Well, I was saying earlier, Steve, before you called in, it would be great if we had a leader in Doña Ana who said, we're going to grow this economy no matter what.
I think that is essentially going to be the question for every community in every state of the nation. If we're going to grow a legitimate economy, it has to start at the bottom. It can't be top down. Top down is the old factory model. That's how the Model T was built. It's the way our government operates. But right now things are viral. They start up from the ground. They're open. They're open source. And it's just people coming together organically. That's what we're going to have to do to make this country successful. You can look, if you compare it to cabs, you either have the yellow cab mentality where you sit around and wait, or the Uber mentality where you look and you see your car 3 minutes away and you select it. You can see it as it approaches. He calls you and says, I'm right here at your door. I mean, and that's the difference in our government. We need to evolve into an Amazon.com type government instead of this old brick and mortar thing that we've had for 100 years. And I think that's where Trump is taking us.
Well, and I was just thinking about this this idea that we've spent 8 years underperforming, and now Trump is saying that, or 10 years, Trump is saying that we're going to get rid of 75% plus business regulations. What's your reaction?
Well, it's probably that much is needed to get rid of. And again, it's not that we don't want regulation. It's the regulations haven't kept up with the business models. Why don't we let regulations develop organically from the local level, saying, okay, here's a problem. Let's adjust it in this way to where we can have jobs and preserve the environment. I think that's where everyone wants us to be. And so I think that's where he's headed. He will get rid of a lot of dead wood in the bureaucracies and a lot of dead weight in the regulations.
Yeah. So the feeling in Washington with the GOP is excitement, but there's some backdrop to this fight over the size of the inauguration and everything, and Lindsey Graham has stepped into this and everything. But I'm wondering, maybe, is it possible that Trump is just stirring the pot more to make it more exciting, to distract from some of the stuff that's going on? I mean, how do you see it?
Well, I don't know him personally, so it's hard to evaluate. I know that most people don't care about the size of the inauguration, and so he's kind of off message, but it does not seem to be – it didn't damage him in the campaign. People said, we know who he is. It's kind of odd that he takes these distractions on with Miss Universe or whatever, but we're still going to vote for him. As long as he creates jobs, I think he's going to be one of the most popular presidents ever, because that's the underlying fear.
Yeah.
Democrats and Republicans alike are afraid that we've given away our prosperity, that we gave away all of our jobs to other countries, and Mr. Trump says we're going to pull them back. He's already talking to the car manufacturers yesterday. Talked to the unions at the car manufacturers the day before, and the union people said it was great, and the car manufacturers said it's great. Again, people are looking at what we can do to rebuild the strength of our economy. We had given away so much manufacturing, and that you can't build wealth if you don't have manufacturing. If you're not creating things, if you're not growing things, if you're not manufacturing, you're not going to be a prosperous country. And so that's what he's concentrating on. So that's the cause for excitement. He'll get into these stirs. It just seems to be his personality. But as long as he can manage the growth of the economy, as long as he can get the work done, just whatever he says over there, I'm not really too concerned about.
Well, you know, I'm thinking that as more time goes on, people are going to look back and see Obama as basically like a cult leader with this big smile, but always downgrading, always, you know, he's always planting seeds of doubt and trying to get people to accept less Just through the power of his personality, just through the power of suggestion, and through all of these different decisions that he made, he shrank not just America's economy, but our spirit, you know?
Yeah, we have been gloomy for 6 or 8 years. People just felt like that they have to settle for less. And that's not the American way. The American way is be all that you want to be. Grow, work as hard as you want to, grow as large as you want to, and create as many jobs as you want to. And my wife and I are good examples. We started just, both of us, very poor. We worked to a size, and I will just tell you that we could have grown 10 times the size we were, but we looked at each other and said, we don't consume a lot. We don't spend a lot of money. We'd rather have free time than more money.
Yeah.
And so we plateaued about 50 employees, because below 50, you have a different set of regulation. Life is simpler, less complex than if you get more than 50. So that's where we stopped. And we've been perfectly satisfied, but other people, they want to get magnificent empires, and more power to them. They create more jobs. But for the two of us, we chose. And that's what Americans want to do, is choose where they want to be, choose how far they want to go.
Well, if you hadn't done that, you wouldn't be in the position that you're in today, Steve. And so we're grateful to that. Hey, I've got this a question for you. I know you've got kind of a spiritual interest in something you mentioned earlier. Where are we going to choose the yellow cab model or the Uber model? In Daniel 12, it says something along the lines of that in the future, people will travel to and fro and learning will increase. And I'm wondering if you see these as kind of, you know, the times that we're living in significant in terms of growth, intellectual. You've got the internet, you've got all this information out there. We've got the possibility to grow freedom and liberty now that we have Trump in there.
Well, I think that's the reason that that the Bible has stayed as such an important document. That, I mean, if you're a strong believer in the Bible, you believe that it's inspired. The inspiration means that it's applicable no matter what generation you're in. So you can imagine, as the printing press came along, then they said, oh, wow, we used to have to just tell stories. Now we can put it in books, and the books will be more accurate than the stories. And so you're right. This quote from Daniel is as relevant today as it was then. And that's the kind of the basis that I believe that we can make our life understandable if we have principles that we know and see to be true. And so, yes, I would think that those comments are very relevant today.
It is stunning compared to when you were growing up and I was growing up, the idea of having a phone that you could carry with you. I mean, that
people,
was absurd.
Yeah, absolutely. And the phone is far more than a phone. And we used to read about this stuff in Dick Tracy back in the 50s. And you'd say that it couldn't exist, and it exists right now on the Apple Watch. And you say, okay, these guys who are sitting back there thinking about this were very accurate. But our technology can also become a chain to us. You talk to the millennials, ask one of them what happens when they lose their phone. Now, I've lost my phone before, but I just kept on percolating and went around my business because I had lived life without one. The millennials have never lived life without this, and the most common word that is used is panic. If you panic when you lose a piece of equipment, then we ought to take a look at and maybe slow our lives down just a bit.
Quality of life is what you're talking about, and I do agree with you that that we have to go for quality of life, but, you know, the transition now to what's going on in Washington, do you see this as a time of just growth and reaffirmation of American values? And what do you see in the future, the near future and the farther future for us?
Well, I think we're going to rebuild the manufacturing base. One of the great weaknesses of our economy is that we had transitioned from a manufacturing economy to a retail economy. Retail economy is not prosperity. That's you and I. You buy shoes and I buy clothes. I buy them from you, you buy them from me. So there's never great prosperity available in retail. The the tremendous growth is when you manufacture. You plant one seed, you harvest 1,000 seeds. And so I think we're going to see more of that. But I will tell you, the energy, I was at the pro-life meeting last night, and of course we got to March for Life this Friday, and the life community is saying, here's this guy who, by all accounts, never even contemplated spiritual, moral things much, and many of the revelations that came out in the campaign said that. And yet, when it comes down to it, when the firing starts, they're saying last night he is by far the most pro-life leader ever in the United States. And so I think that this is one of the magnificent things about human nature, is that we can change, we can transform, and so the least lie the strongest. And that's according to the people who are out there working on the front lines of the life issue. But then also, who would say that he's going to bring the trade, the unions, and the car manufacturers together and say, we got to start working together? These are big times.
But I'm on this pro-life thing. You know, it's almost as if Trump snuck up on everybody right out in the open. I think he's a guy, this is how I see him. He is sincere. That's why he's trying to put all his promises out there into the law. But I am thinking that he's the kind of guy that when he becomes convinced of something, he really goes after it. And he's got one talent, one attribute that is spectacular, and he is absolutely unafraid of criticism.
Unafraid of criticism, and that's the piece that the American people identified with. They were tired of political leaders who wouldn't take stands, who would take a stand and then apologize the next day because somebody said something mean to them. He just said, bring it on. And at one point, about before he picked Mike Pence, and even right after, the entire world appeared like it was descending down on his head, and he never flinched. I've watched this game from very close for quite a while, and I was stunned. I just thought he's about to collapse. He will give. He's got to break. He just kept on and kept tweeting out in the middle of the morning. He's well defined in his own mind. Plays the game he's comfortable in. Has been around long enough to know who he is and where he comes from, and is not afraid of it. And I really love that.
Yeah, and that's leadership, and that's what draws you to people. One of the things that draws people forward in this notion of leading from the front that is so crucial, especially in the military, but the idea that a leader is unafraid, he's physically heroic and mentally cannot be vanquished. And if I can make an example, Aaron Rodgers in the last game, not the last game, but the game before that when he beat the Cowboys, I say with all due respect to the fans, Aaron Rodgers showed that absolutely refused to flinch in the eye of the storm. And I think Donald Trump has that. People are drawn to that, Steve, and they relish it. The idea that someone has a vision that is strong and that is positive, for example, to defend helpless, defenseless babies, he'll stand up for those, and he's totally unafraid of the firestorm that's coming on it. That is so rare, isn't it?
It is very rare. And he's also multidimensional. So he's as equally comfortable standing under the fire defending the unborn as he is in the economic fire. And the world leaders all were telling how bad it's going to be and that they're not going to work with him. Well, I have been telling on Congressional Review, one after another, Mexico was during the campaign, he is horrible, we're not going to ever work with him. And now they're saying, well, yes, we probably can find our way forward and it's going to be fine. Then we have China saying all these things, and then a couple of days ago saying, well, yes, we're okay. Mr. Trump understands the power of position in a negotiation. Position is, and we've got the position. You can't teach negotiation from a book. You can't teach it by sitting down in a three-day course. You have to live negotiations. And if you don't negotiate, when you get in and you suddenly start, then you're going to be positioned on everything because you just don't see the flows. He sees the flows, puts down one statement. He knows that he has set the playing field and it will come to him. And that's what's happening right now in all these world leaders. He's equally comfortable going out and talking to businesses in oil and gas as he is on the life issue. And so I just think it's been a remarkable revelation to see the man develop in this campaign and now then in the first few days in office.
I do want to get back to something you said because I think it's so crucial. He got up, and here's a guy, because of his wealth and because of the fact that he was elected in spite of total rejection by the elites and by the GOP upper echelon, he doesn't owe anything to anybody. So therefore, when he gets up and he gives an inauguration and he mentions God and he mentions the fact that God will protect us, and he mentions that if in the Bible it talks about people coming together, people who believe in God coming together and finding peace. I was sitting there with my mouth hanging open and I'm thinking, these ideas are so profound. And this guy didn't have to put that in there, you know. So it seems like he's gone through a spiritual birth of some kind, and he's really bought into the idea that that like you say, the Bible or Jesus or God, however you want to direct it, is a part of a healthy society.
Yes, and I think you're capturing exactly right, Kelly, that there is some sort of a rebirth going on. This happened to Abraham Lincoln. He grew up very strong in the faith, and as a kid, he was raised that way. But when he got out on his own, he rejected it and walked away and was one of the fiercest advocates and just really very tough on any Christians in political office. When he got elected as president, he said, "It brought me to my knees. There were no other answers," he says. And I think Trump found the same thing, and Mike Pence tells some very revealing stories about riding on Air Force One with him, and that inside look at a guy who just would tell you, he just said, "Hey, I didn't much live with the values you evangelicals have, but I really appreciate your support." I mean, that directness, that honesty and openness is refreshing. But I think he is going through a spiritual transformation.
And, you know, just dealing with this society where there has been this notion out there that to have a good society, you've got to reject God and you've got to totally separate church and state, has left a ghetto. It's a national ghetto in which God is not invited in. And the result of that is a sickness.
It's a moral chaos that is taking over our cities. And he's referring to the carnage. It will be very interesting to see if he goes into Chicago, the home of Barack Obama, and takes that city over to try to stop the murder of blacks in that city.
Yeah,
it is carnage. 228 people since the first of the year. If that was happening in Afghanistan, Iraq, or any of our war zones, the press would be livid. But they are silent. And this is another thing that Trump, through his tweets, is removing the barrier of the press to certain information. When he tweets, it goes viral, and he's able to communicate directly to the American public. It's an amazing thing that has occurred in this 12-month period of watching Donald Trump transform and come into his own as a political figure and then take office. This, I would tell you, it's been a stunning travel.
Well, and also this idea that he's going to bring in these very strong and intellectually solid and with impeccable credentials, these Supreme Court justices. I mean, I am telling you, I have never, ever seen anything like what's going on in so many different ways. It's almost, if you're a Christian or if you're a God person, to have to see it as some kind of a miracle.
You do. And again, that's one of the things that faith allows you to do. You can't explain it, except this is a miracle. A transformation of the human spirit is always miraculous. And so I think that we will watch this go on. And frankly, I don't think Mr. Trump is too much aware of it. I think it's just occurring. It's natural. It's to him. It's just, he didn't probably a year ago say, "I'm going to develop the spiritual side." I think it's just the way that it has to be in order to survive the days. And he seems very comfortable in this kind of new persona that he is developing. And I'm just sitting again every day and thinking, well, this is a pretty good move. Paul Ryan just was at the White House yesterday and came in and said, look, Trump just signed the Mexico City order, which says no taxpayer dollars, no foreign taxpayer dollars can fund abortion. And he said he was just gleeful about it. He said, look, Paul, look what I'm just saying. And so it's like a discovery process on his. And it's for somebody who's been out in the world and in the billion-dollar category to see sort of the genuine happiness at doing something significant like signing that Mexico City executive order, you just have to say this is pretty neat that he's not jaded, that he's not worn out, that
he's not
fresh and new.
He's not. It is absolutely astounding.
Yeah, it is. Listen, my friend, I got to run here in 2 minutes. We'll wrap it up. But what else have we got to talk about? It's not all Trump. Now, I will tell you that with all of the good things, I am concerned about where we're going to end up on this whole Affordable Care Act, the Obamacare. I see the Senate already retreating away and saying, well, we're going to do Obamacare light. So it's going to be interesting to see where Mr. Trump's pragmatism on everything deals with this.
One question, I believe he signed something in which the mandate doesn't have to be enforced, but for those people who didn't pay the mandate in the past, is there any chance that'll be wiped out?
I just don't know that. No one knows the extent of the executive order except you don't enforce it now. If you had the penalty in the past, I suspect it won't go back. It would be very complex to go back and refund it. It's just if you want to go out and shop in the marketplace, then go shop in it.
Yeah.
And that could be the most important single factor. So it's a very tumultuous time with the changes that are coming, and you still have to stay focused on the ball. So with all the roar of the stands and everything, I've got to stand up a new committee. I'll be the chairman on this terrorism and illicit financing. That's a stunning task. It's overwhelming. We have not had a committee on that before. So I've got to stay focused on that. And then we got on the resources committee. We've got tremendous things to deal with in the federal agencies there. So yes, I'm watching Mr. Trump, excited about it, but I'm also staying focused on the things that I have to do.
Right. But this is going to be a session in which a lot of stuff gets done overall.
It will. The Senate Democrats will block a tremendous amount, but we've got two bills that we can push that will do major things. The reconciliation, we can do two of those. And so one of them is going to be fundamental tax reform. Kevin Brady from Houston is doing a magnificent job on the structure of the tax reforms that he's laying out, looking to cut business and personal taxes maybe from 36% to 36-38% where it is right now, down to anywhere 20 or so.
And how about corporate tax? Or is that the same
corporate
thing?
Corporate taxes would go the same, yes. So that will manufacturers will come flowing back in.
Now, how about the repatriation of these trapped funds that are out there in these, you know, in these offshores or in these foreign countries? That's trillions of dollars.
It is, and I think we'll see that.
How
that money will then be invested in new jobs when it gets back here. So, yeah, I think we'll see the repatriation of that money.
And what are they going to do to bring the money back?
I don't know. That's not my committee, and so that's kind of inside stuff that I haven't had time to look at yet. But they will give some window of opportunity, whatever, without taxing it. That's always been the problem. Listen, I got to run. I got to be on a bus in about 3 minutes.
Thanks, Steve. Have a great
day. Right. Always great talking to you.
You
never
too.
Have enough time, but we'll catch up with you.
Thank you, Steve. Take care.
Thank you, brother. Appreciate it.
You bet. Bye-bye. All right, folks. Steve Pierce there. And so exciting time to be in in Washington, an exciting time to be an elected official. And I was just thinking about something Steve had said, talking about how when Trump had been, you know, with this genital grabbing comment that he made, and how the whole world was coming down on him and that he didn't flinch. And Dave Chappelle said when he saw that, he really admired him. Now, Dave Chappelle comes out later and says, I don't support the guy. But I think there is something that is inherently attractive about courage. And, you know, we associate that somebody has a moral vision and then we expect them to have the courage to follow through on it. And that's a lot of times doesn't happen. But yeah, courage is very attractive. And I think that also a person who's unambiguously in favor of growth. And then he said some things during his inauguration that made me think of the ghetto, that made me think of these trap generations that grow up in the ghetto. And they're just, you know, it's crime of one kind or another. And they just have to adapt to it to survive. And trying to save those people and revive the ghettos would be unbelievable. I think it would be, you know, I mean, just the idea that you're going to do that. Now, we haven't even played any music yet today, so see if I can find some quick Sinatra here. But it's great talking to Steve, and I was trying to, we were trying to arrange him coming on. And oh, here's a great song, if I can get it to play in time. Oh my gosh, they've got these new ads that you have to listen to the whole thing. So anyway, Kelly O'Connell here, 523-1450 and 805-6180. We'll get back to the topics at hand, but nice to hear that it seems like good things are occurring in Washington. And I've never seen anybody as I've just never seen anybody like Trump. It's just kind of shocking. It's just almost overwhelming to watch him at work. Hey, it's Kelly.
Hey, Kelly, Tom again. Did you get my text?
Honestly, I haven't looked at the text.
Well, anyway, I put down it's the city manager, signature on that. Ready? Donaldson, I think it is.
All right. Okay.
And I put down the address. The return envelope is National Research Center, and I think it was Bell, New Jersey. Anyhow, it's on the text. I wanted to check on that address. I didn't have a good connection with you. Is it 101 Perkins?
Yes.
And that's a street, right?
Yes.
8001?
Something like that.
Don't know for sure, huh? Okay, and put your name on the address?
Yes.
All right, we'll do it. Have a good one.
Thanks, Tom.
Thanks.
Okay, good morning, 7:06. And man, I've got a lot of texts between yesterday and today. And I'm just kind of looking at those to see. Trump is pumped. It's really comforting to know there's someone at the wheel again, isn't it? Indeed it is. It is such a fresh breath of air, not having progressive Marxist decisions being made in Washington. Wow. Yes, it feels good. And, you know, Obama had this kind of strange combination of he wanted to do a lot of kind of ambitious things, but at the same time, when push came to shove, when there was a real crisis, he was afraid, you know. I'll never forget, I brought this up before, when there was this hemorrhaging in the Gulf of the oil and Deepwater Horizon, and you know, Obama didn't have an answer for it, and he was totally distracted, and I remember he ended up going on these, I think, some golf expedition over to Dakota, I was just thinking, you know, here's this guy is so ambitious. He so wants to be seen as the greatest person in the world. And yet when we have a little crisis, he dries up and blows away. You know, I'm just so amazed. And really, I mean, you could always feel that kind of reluctance from him. And I think maybe because of his training to be in the opposition, in the minority opposition of these political movements, you know. All right. Here is another text. It's my understanding that the laws are already here, there for the border wall, and that we don't appropriate the money. Can you get McCain on your show to ask him if he still wants to build a dang wall? I wouldn't want to waste my time talking to John McCain. Building the wall is not rocket science. Duh. All right, so here is a little clip from CNN on how we might be able to build the wall.
To build a wall on the border between the United States and Mexico. You're talking about an area 1,954 miles stretching across California, Arizona, New Mexico, and right here in Texas, just about 100 yards away from Mexico. We spoke to civil engineers, architects, and academics. They all say the wall can be built. It can be done. The question is, how? The first thing one has to do is before you go up, you have to go down and build a foundation. This will help provide support for the wall. In order to prevent people from tunneling underneath it, it should be at least 5 feet deep. The second thing one must consider is, what do you use to build the wall? What materials do you go after? Well, how about cinder block? The upside is it's strong, it's secure, it's readily available. The downside is it's labor intensive to have to stack every single brick in order to build the wall. So our experts say that option doesn't work. There is another option, using poured concrete on site. That's what they did when they built the Hoover Dam. The downside to that is when you pour concrete in warmer climates, like along many of these border states, experts say what you could end up with is a weaker wall because the concrete might not dry correctly, meaning a wall that could end up crumbling. So what could be the answer here? The experts that we spoke to say the way to go is pre-casted cement wall panels. Those panels would be lined side by side, sort of like what you might see on a highway. Each panel would be about 20 feet high, again, 5 feet below ground, about 10 feet wide and 8 inches thick. Again, that wall would be stretching some 2,000 miles, and our expert says it would require 339 million cubic feet of concrete, and that's just for the panels. You're also going to need reinforced steel, at least 5 billion pounds. So what about the estimated cost? Because it hasn't been done before, let's use those highway panels as an example. They cost about $40 a square foot. That would end up costing about $10.5 billion. Sounds like a lot of money, is a lot of money. But again, remember, Donald Trump says the U.S. government wouldn't end up footing the bill on this one. It would be Mexico. And what about the timing on all of this? How long would it take to build? According to our expert, if you're ambitious, you could get it done within a presidential term, 4 years.
You could get it done a lot faster than that. But the upshot is, you know, and there's just article after article of this leftism. Leftism puts out as a fact, this is, if you spend your time studying this, for one day, one half a day, for 30 minutes, you'll find out it's absolutely true. They put out as fact the things that they want to be true, and then they try to build their way back from it. And that's why there's so much misinformation. That's why there's so much fake news out there, is because they confuse what is true with what they want to be true. And it just puts out a very toxic brew of disinformation. All right, so here is Trump to take action on refugees. I think we reported on this, but here's another go round.
Donald Trump about to keep a major campaign promise and sign some executive orders tomorrow. These are very significant orders. We understand there to be kind of two broad categories. One, restricting refugees coming to the United States. And the second one, banning visas from seven majority Muslim countries until the DHS can vet. Change the vetting process. Elise Labatt is out front. Elise, what more are you learning? I mean, we understand there's seven countries involved with this visa ban.
That's right. And they include, Aaron, Iran, Iraq, Syria, Libya, other countries that that Donald Trump, as the candidate, has said that were kind of terror-prone countries. And basically, Aaron, I think you could see this as an evolution of what started as what President Trump had called on the campaign trail a Muslim ban. He had said that perhaps for a time that the U.S. should ban all Muslims from the country because the majority of terrorist attacks are coming from what he called radical Islamic terrorism. Over the course of the campaign, as you know, that turned into what he calls now extreme vetting. So right. I think you could see this as part of the extreme vetting, that there'll be a lot tighter restrictions on refugees coming from those countries. And I think for the time being, he'll ban visas from those countries until what he says there could be a stricter vetting process there.
All right. So banning visas, and do you see it also as likely a refugee ban for now?
I think it's going to be, I mean, listen, the whole refugee process works through the United Nations. I think what you're going to see is some much tougher regulations on refugees coming in. And listen, to be fair, refugees coming into the country from any country around the world are subject to some of the already strictest vetting from any type of visa, that any person that comes to the United States. That could get even tougher. But already as it is, refugees specifically from Syria, which is where this all generated during the campaign, it can take a Syrian refugee up to 2 years to make it to the United States. So I'm not sure that could be, but, you know, that's basically what the plan is, to be stuck to the border.
All right. So let's come back and we'll here's one more. Keystone and Dakota Access Pipelines. You want gas to be cheaper? Bring in more product. Here's Trump.
This is with respect to the construction of the Dakota Access Pipeline. Dakota Access Pipeline. Again, subject to terms and conditions to be negotiated by us.
Okay. This is construction of pipelines in this country. We are, and I am, very insistent that if we're going to build pipelines in the United States, the pipe should be made in the United States. So unless there's difficulty with that, because companies are going to have to sort of gear up, much pipeline is bought from other countries. From now on, we're going to start making pipeline in the United States. We build it in the United States. We build the pipelines. We want to build the pipe. Going to put a lot of workers, a lot of steel workers back to work.
That's exciting, huh? Can't criticize that. And that Trump is, doing what he can to, the whole thing with the Keystone Pipeline was so sickening. Here's a little bit more, though. Well, let's take a break and come back and talk a little bit more, because it does affect us, the rules and regulations for petroleum movement and production, extraction. 717 Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, AM 1450, 523 1450. If you're a real lefty, a real environmentalist, call in. Feel free to attack Trump. You've got an open microphone. Want to hear your opinion on this? And as I say, a little more Frank Sinatra. Great song, folks. AM Las Cruces, we'll be back. 523-1450, Kelly O'Connell Show.
That's life.
That's life.
That's what all the people say. You're riding high in April, shot down in May. But I know I'm gonna change that tune. When I'm back on top in June.
It's Kelly here, 722. I was thinking about this the other day when we were talking about the inauguration. Do you remember when Obama had that pastor, that black pastor, come on in the inauguration and he made the racist comments? And I was like, wow, I couldn't believe it, because he had just run on this post-political, post-racial thing. And I thought, wow, that was, absolutely one of the most shocking things that I had ever heard. And I thought, wow, this does not portend well. And I'm just seeing if I can find that clip for you to remind you before we move on from all talk of I'll find it on the break. But it was really bizarre, I just found it so unsettling that somebody would have something like that in their inauguration. And so Obama obviously thought that he would build an empire that lasted for 1,000 years through political correctness and his racial view of life and everything, and his anti-capitalism and pro-Muslim and all these different things. And it's all that stuff's getting washed down the drain. All right, here is a little bit more from Trump. The next executive order he signs on making it easier to go through the permit process.
This is about streamlining the incredibly cumbersome, long, horrible permitting process and reducing regulatory burdens for domestic manufacturing. Many of the people that we've been meeting with over the last long period of time, but yesterday and others, the process is so long and cumbersome that they give up before the end. Sometimes it takes many, many years, and we don't want that to happen. And if it's a no, we'll give them a quick no. And if it's a yes, it's like, let's start building.
The regulatory process in this country has become a tangled up mess and very unfair to people. That's a big one. Okay. This is the expediting of environmental reviews and approvals for high priority infrastructure projects. We intend to fix our country, our bridges, our roadways. We can't be in an environmental process for 15 years if a bridge is going to be falling down or if a highway is crumbling. So we're expediting environmental reviews and approvals. That's what this is. Okay.
So anyway, you know, this is, everybody knows the game on this thing, that the environmentalists find out that there's going to be some new project, some plan, whatever, and they spring into action. And what they do is they protest, they launch lawsuits and stuff, anything that they can do to stop it, because deep down in the minds of these people, the earth should be this pristine place where mankind makes a very small footprint and the vast majority of the world is untouched, and the earth is living as Gaia, a living planet in which all animals get along equally with one another, and that these what they call apex predators are put back out there. So the bears and these big cats, and you know, what they really wanted to do, and I talked about this a long time ago, wrote an article on rewilding. What this Agenda 21 crowd would like to do is move human beings off of the land into the city and have them live close to where their factory jobs or whatever. And so they don't have to drive around too much and waste too many resources. The earth would then be returned to animals, and we would import from Africa, in some instances, animals that had been living in the United States or in the North America, I should say, maybe 20,000 years ago. And so, as crazy as that sounds, these people reject the dominion mandate to be fruitful and multiply and take the earth over and make it your own and make it productive, you know? And the only way that you can have, you know, you can grow crops is cut down trees, pull out roots, plow up fields, and make it productive for agriculture. And what these people are opposed to is that. And they'd also like to reduce the population of the earth down to 500,000. Well, you remember I was mentioning earlier, socialism has an extremely strong sense of suicide in it, a suicide mission. Here's a little bit. Let's take a brief respite here and come back, and we'll talk about a few other things. I got some more things on the agenda. And I'm just looking what I have here. Well, probably more of the same. There's so much going on of a change in nature. But we can also talk about, I guess, if you want to continue on the conversation on feminism, which I find kind of boring. 728 AMLS Cruises AM 1450 52314. We'll be right back.
That's life. And as funny as it may seem, some people get their kicks stomping on a dream. But I don't let it get me down.
All right. So here is this thing that this guy said. I want you to remember this from January 20th, 2009. This is Reverend Joseph Lowery's benediction.
and in the joy of a new beginning. We ask you to help us pray for that day when black will not be asked to get back, when brown can stick around, when yellow will be mellow, when the red man can get ahead, man, and when white will embrace what is right. Let all those who do justice and love mercy say amen.
And they showed a picture of Obama sitting there with a big smile on his face when he started saying this stuff. And, you know, Obama was just a misfit when it came to leadership. He was so caught up in his own ideas that he never really embraced leading the entire country. And he was ideologically opposed to working with the opposition. So, and maybe that's a good thing. Maybe he would have been able to pass if he was if he understood the art of politics a little bit better instead of just, you know, showboating, he might have been able to pass long-term legislation that which he did. You know, there have been things that were passed, but they were shepherded by Nancy Pelosi and Senator Reid. Reid became even more partisan, if it was possible, than Obama. And in doing that, he ended up killing hundreds, probably thousands of bills that came out of the House that represent the voice of the people across the nation, across America. He strangled him in the crib. He didn't let him come up for discussion. So Senator Reid has a lot to answer for himself. And the upshot is that they didn't achieve what they wanted, which was to shut down American prosperity, to force us to become more socialistic. All right, so here's a little bit on Trump clamping down on federal agencies, which is kind of interesting, and this is from thehill.com.
The Trump administration has established a temporary media blackout at the Environmental Protection Agency. They have also banned staff from awarding any new contracts or grants. Emails sent to EPA staff since Donald Trump's Friday inauguration described prohibitions banning press releases, blog updates, or posts on agency social media accounts. The administration has also ordered a provisional suspension of all new business activities at the department. This includes issuing task orders or work assignments to EPA contractors. Such orders are expected to have an immediate and significant impact on EPA actions nationwide.
Just another one of his executive orders. The greatest thing about this is that they can't really complain because, you know, Obama did his whole thing through executive orders. So now they're stuck. They would have liked to stand up and say, that's not representative government. You're not taking that through the legislature. It's unfair for you to go through executive orders. That's not democratic, but they can't do it because they celebrated wildly whenever Obama picked up his pen and his phone to sign executive orders. Here is a story about a lady who, Secret Service agent, who wouldn't take a bullet for Trump. And we're living in a day when professionalism is superseded in so many different arenas, not just in the media, not just in the print media, in the news media, but even in government service, in which the purpose of the service is to serve the people, serve the elected. And it's always justified by the left. The left always says, the far left says, well, we're doing this because it's the right thing to do. Now, here's this lady who wouldn't take a bullet for Trump. A Secret Service agent, my goodness.
The president's last line of defense. But one Secret Service agent has suggested she wouldn't take a bullet for President Trump. The Secret Service says it is taking appropriate action after Facebook posts by a senior agent in Denver, Colorado, Carrie O'Grady is the name, surfacing in the press. The posts were made prior to the election. O'Grady wrote that she would, quote, take jail time over a bullet or an endorsement for what I believe to be a disaster to this country and the strong and amazing women and minorities who reside here. I am with her. Well, she has since deleted the post, and O'Grady declined to comment to CNN.
Well, that's, That's pretty sad, isn't it? You know, I mean, I took this job. She took this job to in order to defend the United States, but her personal political vision is more important than the life of the president of the United States. So it's a good thing that she posted that. But we are living in times when the far left is getting in, putting itself into a position where there is no law other than what they want. And so what she wants is what she feels to be fair. Excuse me. And what is fair in this particular instance is to allow the president to be shot and killed. And she's even willing to go to jail for that. My goodness. I mean, you know. And so the Democrats want to make sure that you understand sure. where
and it makes me sad that we're even
where they're coming from. And I've got a little clip here. A very weird thing has happened now. The DNC is the Democratic National Committee, and they are now trying to find a better clip of this. This is really bizarre. This is one of the weirdest things that I've ever seen, but it's in complete keeping with where these people are coming from. I find it sad. I'll get that the clip for you. I'm going to make sure I've got the right clip, but it's pretty sad. So you've got one party that is completely dedicated, totally dedicated to this symbolic politics, whatever you want to call it, but they're so caught up in race. They act like the only reality out there is race. Now, switching gears here, do we need to send the federal government into these inner cities that are totally destroyed or are just like the jungle? Total carnage is what they called it in Chicago. And you see Obama's right-hand man took that city over, and it has fallen into just total collapse. There's something like 800 murders there this year in the last 12 months. Here's from Trump.
Donald Trump said on Twitter Tuesday that if the city of Chicago doesn't fix the horrible carnage going on in the city, that he will send in the feds. There has been 228 shootings in the city since the start of 2017 and 42 deaths, which is a 24% increase since last year at the same time. Trump urged Chicago Mayor Rahm Emanuel on January 2nd to ask for aid from the feds to solve the issue of violence, saying, "If mayor can't do it, he must ask for federal help." Trump regularly used Chicago as an example during his campaign when referring to rising inner city crime, accusing the establishment of protecting itself, but abandoning regular citizens who have suffered from poverty and violence.
All right, so should the federal government get involved? One of the hallmarks of the conservative movement is the separation of powers between the federal and the state. But, you know, there's obviously times when during an emergency, there needs to be some action. So what would it look like if they did get involved? 523-1450 to call in and 805-6180 text. Come back and talk about that a little bit more. Kelly O'Connell, 523-1450. It is the 25th of January.
Cause this fine old world, it keeps spinning around. I've been a puppet, a pauper, a pirate, a poet, a pawn, and a king.
Here is a few headlines for you. Immigration directive signed, construction order for wall, temporary ban on refugees, presidency upends familiar storylines. Trump bump, Dow is up to 20,000. And there is a fight now in states between governors and mayors over sanctuary city status, but of course not, not in California, which all California stands for, is did you? I think I mentioned this. 1/3 of people that live in California want to secede from the nation. So Shia LaBeouf, the very angry and violent actor, is planning to live stream for 4 years on Trump's presidency. That is bizarre. I wouldn't want to look at this guy for 5 seconds, but teen robberies rising in Washington, D.C., as young as 12 years old are getting arrested. And Nasty or Nice study links personality to brain shape. Wonder what the best shape to have is. Maybe you can, next time you go on a date, you can ask for a brain scan. Michael Jackson daughter speaking out. Paris Jackson, obvious he was murdered. They're going to kill me one day. They raped me already. Yeah, his daughter looks nothing like him, but who knows. Naked restaurant opening in the Canary Islands and eating dessert off of nude models is what happens there. And let's see what else here. Dems mobilized for Supreme Court fight. God bless them. Too bad they kind of screwed themselves there. A woman flew through a tornado in a bathtub and survived. Wow, they had to do a story about that, a movie. Violent thunderstorms tore across the South over the weekend, killing 19 people, but in an incredible stroke of good fortune, or a miracle, depending on your view, a bathtub probably saved the life of a woman sheltering from a twister that carved a 13-mile path in East Texas near the border with Louisiana. National Weather Service forecast in Shreveport filed a storm report, 800-wide tornado, packing winds of 103 miles an hour, tore the roof off a storage building Saturday and tossed a party barge 200 yards into a grove of trees. But here is the unbelievable part of the National Weather Service report. A woman inside took shelter in a bathtub, and the tornado lifted the tub out of the home and deposited it in the woods with the woman still sitting in the tub, but the woman was not injured. And I wonder, was there still soapy warm water inside of that tub when she landed? Now, the report says, and this is from John Hansford, a senior meteorologist who conducted the storm survey, spoke to the woman after the incident. She heard the tornado warning come, and she took cover in the tub in her bathroom. The only thing she remembers is that the tornado came in from the southwest across her home. At that point, the whole backside of her house was sheared off. Her bathtub was ripped out of her bathroom, and she ended up still in her tub in some woods near her home. She was uninjured but emotionally shaken. I think that goes without saying. And so a bathroom's a good place to hang out if there's a storm. All right, so we'll take another break here and come back and discuss. I've got one more story here. The Democratic Party autopsy. You Democrats listening in, or your jaw is going to hit the floor and chatter. We'll be right back. 749 AM Las Cruces, AM 1450, 805-6180 to text and 523-1450 to call in.
I've been up and down and over and out, and I know one thing. Each time I find myself flat on my face, I pick myself up and get back in the race.
Dreamers are in limbo. Where are the dreamers living? There is the Texas and California. Texas has 211,000 dreamers. California, 379,000. So that's 600,000 dreamers. And then the other states that have a lot of them, Florida, 72,000, Illinois, 72,000, New York, 71,000. So we have hardly any dreamers here, which may be just as well because they're in limbo. All right. Here is what this lady said, she went to be interviewed, or she did her thing to become the DNC head. Her name is Sally Boynton. Listen to what she said.
My job is to listen and be...
Oops, I got it. Hold on a second. Listen to what her job description is in her own mind. She wants to be the head of the Democratic National Committee.
My job is to listen and be a voice. And my job is to shut other white people down when they want to interrupt. My job is to shut other white people down when they want to say, oh, no, I'm not prejudiced. I'm a Democrat. I'm accepting. My job is to make sure that they get, that they have privilege. And until we shut our mouths and we listen to those people who don't, and we lift our people up, so that we all have equity in this country.
This lady's white, by the way, but I probably didn't need to tell you that. How would you like to live next door to her? Here is Brian Kilmeade on a Democratic Party autopsy.
You know, I really think we need to bring in Brian Kilmeade joining us live on the radio. Brian, what on earth is going on with the Democrat Party? Don't they understand why they lost?
Well, one thing I'm glad that I'm allowed to speak, being that it's your show and Sally Boynton Brown is not conducting it because I happen to be a white person. Okay. Evidently, that is a negative. She also went out to said she wants to train other Democrats, if she becomes the next DNC chair, to be sensitive, communicate, and shut their mouths if they are white.
That's incredible. That's really an extraordinary thing to be saying, especially when you realize that another candidate to chair the DNC is Keith Ellison. Far left guy who he wants, that's the guy right on the street. He wants to run the Democrat Party. What are they thinking?
I have no idea. It's like when you lose, one of the best things you could do as a team, as a person, as an organization is analyze why you lost, make it better, and come back stronger. Their autopsy that we're seeing before our eyes is the problem was not them. I guess it's America. And it was Debbie Wasserman Schultz and it was organization. So we got to get someone more to the left. Where does that leave the Joe Manchins of the world, the people that actually want to get stuff done, that want to reach across the aisle? They feel they got to join Bernie Sanders over here, who isn't even a legitimate Democrat. He's a socialist who just caucuses with the party.
Where's the middle ground in the Democrat Party? It used to run the party. Now I can't identify anyone except maybe Senator Manchin.
You know, Stuart, before we became friends, and our friendship has really flourished, I don't know if you had a chance to tell the viewers, but I tell my listeners all the time, there was a guy named Sam Nunn. Yeah. And if you look at Sam Nunn, he's been endorsing candidates and nominees two separate times for Donald Trump. And he was somebody who straddled the line, be a Democrat when it mattered, but more importantly, be for the country when it was important, and strong on defense. We just don't see that anymore. My hope is that Trump is blurring the lines to such a degree that he's going to bring people together and leave Democrats no choice but to sometimes go to his side.
Look what happened with the union leaders who fronted up to the White House yesterday, met with Mr. Trump, walked out and said, we've never been shown this respect for a long, long time. In fact, we've never been in the White House under President Obama. There's a switch. That's politics turned on its head.
Absolutely. And I'll tell you one thing. The most underreported story in looking back at this election is why did working class America in Michigan, in Wisconsin, and to a degree in North Carolina, and of course Ohio, was never out of Donald Trump's column, even though the governor, the Republican governor, wasn't with them. Why? Because he felt as though the billionaire felt as though he understood the worker, much like they say on the job sites when Donald Trump was pure business and a builder, he would go talk to the builders. He felt.
All right. So just a few minutes left here, but an autopsy on the Democratic Party. The Democratic Party is not just crashed and burning, but the people who are survivors of that are trying to climb back into this burning wreck, and it is astounding to see. Now, the lady that gets up and says, I'm white, I'm from Idaho, which is like 90% white, but I'm going to get up and I'm going to demand that white people shut up, is obviously nuts. But in connection to this, who is going to do more for black people? The person who uses the federal government to come in to these blighted and extraordinarily dangerous ghettos in Chicago and in probably there's a lot of crime outside of the ghetto in more middle class areas in Chicago, and Detroit is just, you know, Detroit itself, speaking of crashing and burning, half the city is gone. They've lost 2/3 of their population after just unending Democrat leadership. To go into these cities and take them over for a little while and to restore order and to lock up the bad guys, the murderers, the drug people, and then make some sort of an agreement with the city and the state for how to keep the streets safe. I mean, so many innocent people that are killed in places like Chicago. And what is Rahm Emanuel, who's supposed to be the most brilliant assistant to the world's greatest politician, he's not able to do anything. For you know, what is leadership? Leadership in this sense means to stop the killing, you know? And, you know, so what, anyway, it's comforting to see, or it's encouraging to see what Trump is doing, but we got a lot more to do. We just got a text. We have 8 years of proof who is not going to help poor inner city black people. Let's help the black people. Let's help all the poor people. Or let's go to where the problem is the worst and make an impact for the better. 7:59, Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces. Have a great day. Meet you back in 22 hours. Ciao.
That's life.
That's life.
I tell you, I can't deny it. I thought of quitting, baby, but my heart just ain't gonna buy it. And if I didn't think it was worth one single try, I'd jump right on a big bird and then I'd fly. I've been a puppet, a pauper, a pirate, a poet, a pawn and a king. I've been up and down and over and out, and I know one thing,